Hello, this is Kurt Benrud from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading movie reviews and theater previews. These are reviews of movies and previews of local theater, all of which will be available with audio description. The content of this program, incidentally, is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Live stuff down the road here, Sunday, April 4th, 2 p.m., is La Sylphide by Carolina Ballet at Memorial Auditorium. Saturday, April 17th, 2 p.m., is Cinderella by North Carolina Theater at Raleigh's Memorial Auditorium. Sunday, April 18th, this is the one that looks most interesting to me. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's G's Bend. That's G-E-E apostrophe S, Bend. This is by Burning Coal Theater at their Murphy School Theater on Polk Street in Raleigh. Tuesday, May 4th, 7 p.m., Wicked at SunTrust. It's by SunTrust Broadway Series at Durham's Performing Arts Center. Sunday, May 7th, 3 p.m., is All I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten by Carrie Players in the Carrie Town Council Chambers. Saturday, May 8th, 2 p.m., River Dance by Broadway Series South in Raleigh's Memorial Auditorium. Sunday, May 9th, 2 p.m., Romeo and Juliet by Carolina Ballet in the Fletcher Opera Theater. And the final listing we have is Sunday, May 23rd, 2 p.m., Sleeping Beauty by Carolina Ballet in Raleigh's Memorial Auditorium. La Sylphide is choreographed by Robert Weiss and Lynn Taylor Corbett. And once again, it's Carolina Ballet's production, showing on Sunday, April 4th at 2 p.m., one of the oldest surviving romantic ballets. First choreographed in 1836, La Sylphide has been enjoying a revival in the last decade. Carolina Ballet breathes new life into this magical tale for its Raleigh premiere. It will be unlike anything you've ever seen. Also on this program is a world premiere by Tony Award-nominated Broadway choreographer Lynn Taylor Corbett. Tickets for this range from $18 to $58, and tickets for La Sylphide on Sunday, April 4th, 2 p.m., can be ordered by calling area 919-719-0900. That's 919-719-0900. Cinderella on Saturday, April 17th, 2 p.m., by NC Theater. They say, come relive an enchanting classic and discover that there's more magic than meets the eye. With its time-tested tale, melodic score, and colorful costumes, the hearts of children and adults alike will soar when the slipper fits. Paolo Montalbán reprises his role from the hit Disney movie Cinderella as Prince Christopher. Where will you be at the stroke of midnight? A new take on an old story, this enchanted version of Cinderella will charm you as never before. The enchanted version has puppetry and special effects not in any other version. Tickets run from $31 to $76. The ticket line is 919-831-6950. That's 919-831-6950 for the Saturday, April 17th, 2 p.m. showing of Cinderella by North Carolina Theater at Raleigh's Memorial Auditorium. Here's the one that's got me interested. It's called G's Bend. It's by Elizabeth Gregory Wilder, directed by Mark Williams, and this is the regional premiere of a new play about an African-American community in an isolated rural Alabama setting who learned how to quilt and in doing so found their place in the world. The estimated running time is an hour and 45 minutes. Now, regular prices are $20 for regular people, $15 for senior citizens, students, and active military personnel, but this first Sunday, the audio-described performance is a pay-what-you-can day. And so, in other words, if you want to pay full price and you feel comfortable with that, pay $20. If you really feel like all you can afford is $5 for live theater, pay $5. It's a pay-what-you-can performance with audio description by Burning Coal Theater, and it is Sunday, April 18th at 2 p.m. The title, once again, is G's Bend. Down the road here on Tuesday, May 4th at 7 p.m. is Wicked, the untold story of the Witches of Oz. So much happened before Dorothy dropped in. Long before that girl from Kansas arrives in Munchkin Land, two girls meet in the land of Oz. One, born with emerald green skin, is smart, fiery, and misunderstood. The other is beautiful, ambitious, and very popular. How these two grow to become the Wicked Witch of the West and Glinda the Good Witch makes for the most complete and completely satisfying new musical in a long time, so says USA Today. On Broadway and around the world, Wicked has worked its magic on critics and audiences alike. The show won 26 major awards, including a Grammy and 3 Tonys. Wicked is currently, according to the New York Times, Broadway's biggest blockbuster. Now, there is a 20-minute intermission, and the runtime is 2 hours and 45 minutes. They say they recommend it for children ages 8 and older, and of course adults too, and tickets range from $30 to $140, and you can make reservations by calling 919-680-2781. That's 919-680-2781 for Wicked, the Untold Story of the Witches of Oz. And it's, once again, Tuesday, May 4th, 3 p.m. In Durham's Performing Arts Center by SunTrust Broadway Series. And the last one that we've got a bit of a preview on here is Robert Fulghum's All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. It's based on Robert Fulghum's best-selling books, and this play takes a funny, insightful, heartwarming look at what is profound in everyday life. This tightly woven adaptation has earned standing ovations from Singapore to Prague and from L.A. to D.C. It's an evening of theatrical storytelling in review format, that's R-E-V-U-E format, with monologues, dialogues, and multiple voice narration, enhanced through the use of live piano underscoring, which provides fluidity, charm, and emotional texture. The delightful stories feature colorful characters such as a shy little boy who insisted on playing the pig in his class production of Cinderella and steals the show, a man whose dream of flying carries him high over Los Angeles in a lawn chair buoyed by surplus weather balloons, a mother of the bride who's staged a perfect wedding until the bowling ball of fate rolls down the aisle, and a modern-day Greek philosopher who finds the meaning of life in a piece of broken mirror from World War II. These stories celebrate our very existence, from the whimsy of childhood to the wisdom of old age. And once again, the name of the play is All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. It's written by Robert Fulghum. This will be directed by Phil Krohn. And it's Kerry Players putting this on Sunday, May 7th, 3 p.m., and it's in the Kerry Town Council Chambers. That's the live stuff. We'll move on now to audio-described movies on the big screen. Of course, we have the Apex Beaver Creek Stadium Theater, which now through the 25th, that is Thursday this week, has Repo Men. It's a movie rated R, and that same movie is also, that's the only place where Repo Men is currently playing, but these three theaters, the Beaver Creek Stadium in Apex, the White Oak Stadium in Garner, and the North Hills Stadium in Raleigh, they share around the same movies, so Repo Men should come to the other theaters as well. But anyway, what's Repo Men about? Well, it's a science fiction, fantasy, suspense thriller that runs for 111 minutes. It's rated R. It's directed by Miguel Sapochnik, and it includes Jude Law, Forrest Whitaker, Alice Braga, Joe Ping, Liev Schreiber, Carice Van Houten, Liza Lapira, Chandler Canterbury, and Yvette Nicole Brown. In the futuristic action thriller Repo Men, humans have extended and improved our lives through highly sophisticated and expensive mechanical organs created by a company called The Union. The dark side of these medical breakthroughs is that if you don't pay your bill, The Union sends its highly skilled repo men to take back its property, with no concern for your comfort or survival. Remy is one of the best organ repo men in the business, but when he suffers a cardiac failure on the job, he awakens to find himself fitted with the company's top-of-the-line heart replacement, as well as a hefty debt. When he can't make the payments, The Union sends its toughest enforcer, Remy's former partner, Jake, to track him down. That's Repo Men, and it's playing through this Thursday at the Beaver Creek Stadium in Apex. Garner currently has The Bounty Hunter, and it's playing through this Thursday, and it will be opening at the North Hills Stadium in Raleigh on Friday and running through Thursday of next week. What's The Bounty Hunter about? Well, it's an action comedy genre, rated PG. It's directed by Andy Tennant. It stars Jennifer Aniston, Gerard Butler, Jason Sudeikis, Dorian Missick, Joel Marsh Garland, and Christine Baranski. In this movie, Milo Boyd, played by Gerard Butler, is a down-on-his-luck bounty hunter. He gets his dream job when he is assigned to track down his bail-jumping ex-wife, reporter Nicole Hurley, played by Jennifer Aniston. He thinks all that's ahead is an easy payday, but when Nicole gives him the slip so she can chase a lead on a murder cover-up, Milo realizes that nothing ever goes simply with him and Nicole. The exes continually one-up each other until they find themselves on the run for their lives. They thought their promise to love, honor, and obey was tough. Staying alive is going to be a whole lot tougher. And that's The Bounty Hunter. It plays in Garner at the White Oak Stadium through this Thursday. And it plays in Raleigh, opening this Friday and playing through Thursday of next week. How to contact these theaters? Contacting Apex, the Beaver Creek Stadium, to get the showtimes for Repo Men, you want to call 919-362-7342. That's 919-362-7342 for Apex's Beaver Creek Stadium Theater. In Garner, the White Oak Stadium can be reached at 919-779-7499. That's 919-779-7499. Another movie that's floating around out there with audio description that will eventually come to our local theaters is The Green Zone. It's a war drama that runs for 115 minutes, and it's rated R, directed by Paul Greengrass. The cast includes Matt Damon, Greg Kinnear, Amy Ryan, Brendan Gleeson, Jason Isaacs, and Khalid Abdallah. During the U.S.-led occupation of Baghdad in 2003, Chief Warrant Officer Ray Miller and his team of Army inspectors were dispatched to find weapons of mass destruction believed to be stockpiled in the Iraqi desert. Rocketing from one booby-trapped and treacherous site to the next, the men searched for deadly chemical agents, but stumble instead upon an elaborate cover-up that inverts the purpose of their mission. Spun by operatives with intersecting agendas, Miller must hunt down or rather hunt through covert and faulty intelligence hidden on foreign soil for answers that will either clear a rogue regime or escalate a war in an unstable region. And at this blistering time and in this combustible place, he will find the most elusive weapon of all is the truth. And so those are the movies that we've got on the silver screen in the upcoming week or so. And we'll move on now to some reviews of these movies. Okay, The Bounty Hunter, which plays through this Thursday in Garner and opens Friday, plays through Thursday of next week in Raleigh. This is a review by Laura Clifford. When his wife jumps bail, Milo Boyd thinks it will be a pleasure to bring her in, but not so fast. The investigative reporter, Nicole Hurley, is digging into a murder cover-up and keeps giving him the slip until she ends up running for her life right alongside him. After the appalling romantic comedies Leap Year, When in Rome, and Valentine's Day that kicked off the year, The Bounty Hunter doesn't look so bad, but the best thing I can say about it is that it's serviceable. Butler looks scuzzy throughout, so that the thought of him having physical contact with the perfectly groomed Aniston is unappealing, at least until he takes his shirt off and shows those chiseled abs. But the film has been well-mounted with interesting locations like Atlantic City and Monmouth Park Racetrack, a romantic country inn, a country club and golf course, a bail bondsman's office, a tattoo parlor, and a strip club. Aniston's apartment looks like a magazine spread in which someone on an unlofty budget actually lives. Now, Sarah Thorpe's script keeps multiple storylines and assorted characters crissing and crossing, and director Andy Tennant stages some different action stunts, like Milo chasing an Uncle Sam on stilts through a parade, and Nicole trying to outrun Milo's baby blue Delta 88 on a cycle taxi and a golf cart chase. What makes The Bounty Hunter interesting is a rather large cast of well-cast supporting players, like Christine Baranski as Nick's larger-than-life mom, Kitty, who is a nightclub entertainer. Curb Your Enthusiasm's Jeff Garlin as bail bondsman Sid, and especially the inspired Siobhan Fallon Hogan as Sid's assistant, Teresa. There are also rare moments by Kathy Moriarty as Milo's bookie, Irene, who's on his tail, and Carol Kane as Cupid's Cabin Inn owner, where Milo and Nicole get a very amusing change of clothes after a dunk in a pool. The problem is that all these people are more interesting than the leads. Well, The Bounty Hunter continues the dispiriting tread of the romantic comedy genre, but at least it's merely average rather than downright awful. It will do for some no-brainer entertainment. Now, Mike Massey's review of Repo Men is a little more on the upward than that. He gives it 7 out of a possible 10 points, and he says the idea of a company reproducing or repossessing human organs like a bank repossesses a house is a horrifying futuristic vision. It's also highly unique, so much so that the similar storyline found in 2008's Repo, the Genetic Opera, begs the question as to where the 2010 science fiction film Repo Men got its start. This new look into loaning vital body parts at a deadly price is based on the book The Repossession Mambo, originally published in 2009 and re-released under the matching Repo Men title to coincide with the theatrical adaptation. Who copied who is still a heated debate. Although the idea is thought-provoking, the film tries too hard to be singular and different, resulting in a moderately fun yet cheesy experiment in the unexpected. Unfortunately, while it attempts to create new imagery, it borrows heavily from other existing works. And so, in the future, after the U.S. government declares bankruptcy, a wealthy credit company called the Union steps in to save lives by financing artificial organs. Instead of calling them AOs, they're dubbed artiforgs, and these are for those who are in need. Waiting on a list for transplants becomes obsolete, and just about every body part can be replaced. The fine print, however, allows for the repossession of the item should payments not be made on time. And with a very hefty price tag, a large percentage of clients receive visits from repo men who break into houses or plot traps, not unlike a process server, to take back the Union's merchandise with a scalpel, knives, a stun gun, and no anesthesia. At least there is a complaints department. If you can't pay for your liver, well, that's where I come in. Remy, played by Jude Law, is one of the best repo technicians around, swiftly, uncaringly, and nonchalantly collecting organs from random people who can't foot the bill. He waits in their homes or ambushes nests of runners in hideouts and mercilessly cuts them apart, reclaiming a liver, a pancreas, a heart, or another organ, all while casually listening to his iPod. A job's a job is the motto that he frequently opines, as he and his longtime friend and co-worker Jake, played by Forrest Whitaker, compete in repossessions. Remy's disapproving wife Carol, played by Carice Van Houten, isn't quite so indifferent. His real troubles begin during a routine assignment when a faulty shock unit sends him to the emergency room. He awakens to discover that one of the Union's newest models of artificial hearts has replaced his own. Even after he recovers, he can't shake the newfound feeling of sympathy for runners. And when his own fees get overbearing, he realizes he's become one of the very people he routinely kills. And now he must flee, along with a woman, played by Alice Braga, who essentially has no original body parts, save for her lips. The target audience for Repo Men seems to be those that enjoy broad, light-hearted, action-filled science fiction in the vein of Total Recall or The Matrix. But in its attempt to be daringly original, it bleeds over into the likes of darker material such as Children of Men in 1984 and even Brazil, which could turn off many viewers. The extreme gore is done in a hilarious manner, fueled by exciting music that continually contrasts with the evil deeds or bloodthirsty revenge at hand. The most notable of all, which occurs in a climactic, splendidly choreographed battle, clearly influenced by Old Boy's hammer fight, in a dance of blood-spattering mutilation and autopsy that perfectly captures the idea of a repossession mambo. Perhaps the largest fault with the whole idea is the lack of other supporting futuristic devices. In order to believe that organ repossession could take place in Repo Man's bleak future, shouldn't the terrain be slightly more innovative than a present-day environment with a couple of not-so-cutting-edge weapons thrown in? Where are all the other advancements in technology? Yet, Mike Massey does give 7 out of a possible 10 points to Repo Men. And now the movie with the best review, and this is a Roger Ebert review. It's of the two-thumbs-up variety. He gives it 4 out of a possible 4 stars. Remember, this movie is not yet scheduled at one of our local theaters, but it should be on the way. Green Zone looks at an American war in a way almost no Hollywood movie ever has. We're not the heroes, but the dupes. Its message is that Iraq's fabled weapons of mass destruction did not exist, and that neocons within the administration fabricated them, lied about them, and were ready to kill to cover up their deception. Is this true? I'm not here to say. It's certainly one more element in the new narrative that has gradually emerged about Iraq, the dawning realization that we went to war under false premises. Green Zone, directed by Paul Greengrass, is a thriller that makes no claim to be based on fact, but provides characters and situations that have uncanny real-life parallels. Its director made two of the Bourne films and imports his approach to Baghdad, starring Matt Damon as an unstoppable action hero. But this isn't merely a thriller. It has a point to argue. Critical blunders at the outset made a quick and easy victory impossible and turned Bush's mission accomplished photo op into a historic miscalculation. Green Zone argues, as many observers have, that the fatal error of the United States was to fire the officers and men of the Iraqi army and leave them at large with their weapons. The Iraqi army had no great love of Saddam and might have been a helpful stabilizing force. Instead, it was left unemployed, armed, and alienated. Matt Damon, playing Chief Warrant Officer Roy Miller, is seen at the outset leading a raid on a suspected storage site for weapons of mass destruction. Nothing there. Another raid intended to find weapons of chemical warfare turns up years-old pigeon droppings. Because some of the raids produce casualties, he begins to question the intelligence reports the raids are based on. He speaks out at a briefing and rather improbably finds himself face-to-face with a U.S. intelligence agent named Poundstone. He's fed the usual line and told to perform his duty, but is overheard by Martin Brown, a hulking, grizzled CIA man who's an old Middle East hand. Soon he's meeting with Brown to pass on his doubts. Green Zone indicates that the CIA, which lacked, as in real life, any evidence to back up the weapons of mass destruction claims, was cut out of the loop, and that Poundstone is not only the architect of the neocon fictions, but their enforcer. He even has a military group answering directly to him. Miller also meets a New York newspaper woman named Laurie Dane, played by Amy Ryan, whose report about a secret Iraqi informer have given credence to the weapons of mass destruction claims. From her, he discovers that General R. Rawi of the Iraqi army met with Poundstone in Jordan. Unlike the source Poundstone cited, flatly told him Saddam had no such weapons. So the bad intel was cooked up to justify the war the neocons deserved. Have I made the plot sound complex? Greengrass works with screenwriter Brian Helgeland to tell it with considerable clarity. By limiting the characters and using typecasting, he makes a web of deceit easy to understand. Also a great help to Miller is a local named Freddy, who risks his life to help him, act as a translator, and is given the film's key line of dialogue. The action in Green Zone is followed by Greengrass of the queasy cam style I've found distracting in the past. Lots of quick cuts between handheld shots. It didn't bother me here. That may be because I became so involved in the story. Perhaps also because, unlike the Bourne films, this one contains no action sequences that are logically impossible. When we see a car chase that couldn't take place in the real world, we naturally think about the visual effects. When they could take place, and it's a good movie, we're thinking about the story. Green Zone will no doubt be under fire from those who are still defending the fabricated intelligence we used as an excuse to invade Iraq. Yes, the film is fiction, employs far-fetched coincidences, and improbably places one man at the center of all the action. It's a thriller, not a documentary. It's my belief that the nature of the neocon evil-doing has by now become pretty clear. Others will agree. The bottom line is, this is one hell of a thriller. And once again, Roger Ebert gives Green Zone 4 out of a possible 4 stars, and it's coming soon to a theater near us. Meantime, we're running out of time for this episode of Movie Reviews and Theater Previews. I'm Kurt Benrud, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Hope you've enjoyed this show, and hope you tune in with me next time around. Take care. Bye-bye.